Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 26, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a sunny 58 degrees and very, very springy here in upstate New York. Makes me so happy when I hear the birds sing. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Social Pressure, quote unquote, voluntary participation, Watson and Tech's takeover. We talked about a bunch of things. We talked about how the surveillance state and these voluntary, quote unquote, things that did start out as voluntary programs that they are offering to do with healthcare or to do with many other things, all can be manipulated and force you into doing things that maybe you wouldn't normally sign up to do because they're utilizing peer pressure of those around you to make you the outsider. We've seen this in the vaccine debate. There was a story that I ran across the other day where they are literally utilizing that oxytocin button in mothers. I don't know if we're going to look at oxytocin today. I had a couple stories queued up on how oxytocin can be used to manipulate that love chemical, the mama bear chemical, to further agendas. But they have used this oxytocin mama bear chemical in the vaccine debate to further along their agenda. It has allowed them to pit parent against parent. Everybody, of course, thinking that they're doing the right thing. I feel very sorry for those parents who've never broken out of the cognitive dissonance that they live inside of, believing everything that is spoon-fed to them without question, because that's wrong as well. But you know, you can't go and say that everything is bullshit either. And I know I've said that, and I would say maybe 99% of it is, but not all of it is. There's always some truth in there somewhere. You just got to learn to pull on the right threads and to do some proper investigation. So what they've done is they have pitted mothers, all of whom think they are doing the best for their baby that they will protect to the nth degree because of this chemical, oxytocin, that gives them that mama bear instinct, makes them want to love and trust. They manipulate that chemical to make them trust the machine. We are doing this to keep your baby safe. We are doing this to keep your nation safe. Trust your doctor. Here, don't worry about it because Watson is here. He's going to cure your cancer. I mean, guys, they really have been playing this trust card and pointing to those out there who question any of the narrative because you're trying to upset the apple cart, apparently. Any type of disturbance in the force, any rippling of the waves of the official story, and the background on the stage makes it look like it's not real anymore. And you can't do that, Jenny, because we've paid a lot to psychiatrists, and DARPA, and universities to create this grand illusion that we are now taking you down that hall. And you don't even know it yet because we got full-blown HD full motion video going down the hallway, so it looks like you're still outside. I mean, guys, it really is to that level of deception. We are being marched down the hall right now to obsolescence, to where they're going to just start handing us money so we can sit around and eat grapes and do nothing. And they're calling that our future utopia. Mark my words, it will not be a utopia. They cannot have an entire population 17 billion people is that we are? I don't know. I always forget how many people are on the planet. I think it's 17 billion. Sitting around with nothing to do. Because idle minds become troublemakers. It's not going to happen. And of course, they say it's all about pursuing new interests, and you could become more poetic, or, you know, Kurzweil has all these utopian dreams of the days when the nanobots are going to connect your brain to the internet 24/7. It's going to be such a wonderful world, and we're going to have robots in every pot, and they'll all be feeding us and cleaning for us, taking care of us when we're old. We'll have our smart apps that we'll be able to see our dashboard, real-time statistics, biostatistics, and what your health is doing. Well, remember, for all these dangling carrots that they are putting in front of us, promising us the world of George Jetson, the world of George Jetson is a panopticon. We've discussed the panopticon. One thing that's interesting is that in the original definition of panopticon, the individuals being surveilled always knew that they were being surveilled. So they always had it in the back of their mind that they needed to control their behavior because they were being watched. Well, up until very recently, the only ones of us that really knew the extent that we were being watched were people that were in the tech industry. It's things we've dealt with for a very long time from different facets, but we always had an idea that those backdoor keys got handed over a long time ago. I've told you guys, I'm certain I know when that happened. Good old Billy Gates, when he settled that antitrust lawsuit right after September 11th, 2001. At least that's when I mark it, but I saw it on Billy's face. But then after the quote-unquote Snowden leaks came out, and again, I reserve right to call a lot of that a psyop. Because all these things that Snowden released, you know, might have been a surprise to Susie American, many of these programs. But if you were in the technology industry, even though we never had names for these programs, we knew about a lot of these things going on. And of course, they were playing off a lot of this NSA stuff as, oh, I don't know, the hackers are here. But remember, we were employing those hacking teams to then find vulnerabilities, to then drop our poison payload, or to sell us access. So the NSA or the Alphabet Agency that wanted in could go do it. And it wasn't just here in the United States, it was global. But now it's out there. The panopticon is real now, because now, after those releases alerting the world to how bad the surveillance and the hacking has gotten, we now all know how badly it is that we're being surveilled. And not only that, but we've been surveilled for 10, 15, 20, 30 years through different means, but probably the last 10 or 15 through everything we've done online. And it's all been bagged and tagged and dossiered. They've been using it to run algorithms. Now that we have AI, we can run all kinds of algorithms to figure out whether or not you're a danger to yourself or others, whether or not you have a mental disease, whether or not you could potentially, just by the sound of your voice, be ill. I don't know, maybe you got a liver problem. Maybe you have a dopamine problem there, Jenny. But they could tell that stuff from your voice. They have all your contacts, all your conversations, all the keywords that have set off red alarms for the last 10 or 15 years. They know whether or not you have a gun, whether or not you go to your doctor, what you buy from the store, and if you're eating Cheetos. They know where you go. They know what you say. They have GPS in your phone. They can track your metadata, even if your GPS is turned off. And it's about to get more invasive. It's what people who are tra-la-lying down this yellow brick road with really cool HD, 3D, walls that look like it's just real reality. It isn't. You're going down that dark hallway to places where the military industrial complex have crafted a lot of this technology. And this is where we've spent a lot of time on this show over the last 5+ years. Has it really been that long? I think it has, if you can even believe it. It's been a 5-year-long lecture course. The world according to Jewel. But it's true. The military industrial complex, namely DARPA, has put a lot of time and effort and years into figuring out how to crack a lot of the chinks in the human armor and how to manipulate those, and not just the human armor, and the biological armor. And they've found ways to utilize those for potential future weaponry, whether it be offensive or defensive, going all the way back to the days of Plum Island and germ warfare. We looked a lot at frequencies and some of the stuff that they were doing with neuromodulation, microwaves, the voice of God, the voice of Allah during the Gulf War. Now we have energy weapons, pulse weapons. And who knows what comes next? Autonomous robots with 3D, 230-point facial recognition who can be told to go find someone and exterminate them, just like the Daleks. You know, I mean, that literally is the world that we find ourselves in today. So when people like me start talking about this stuff, and people like the head of the school board, I don't know, take a look at me, which I don't talk about this stuff in public much, but let's say they did. You know, I've done some experiments in my day just to take a look at public perception and how unintelligent the public is socially. And this is what concerns me, because we are being socially groomed. We are being peer pressured into accepting all these things that just a few years ago, nobody would have ever considered nanobots in their blood. There's all kinds of new cancer treatments now. We're going to give the nanobot the payload, inject them into your bloodstream, and set them loose. See what happens. Guinea pig 101. But just a few years ago, none of us would have stepped up for any of that treatment. And look at how far we've come. In the public view, just with a few commercials saying how wonderful it is, and we're going to be able to save Nana. And of course, the Dr. God class wearing their white coats telling you that this is the treatment we should try because we know it's newfangled. Don't be afraid, Johnny. It's not going to hurt much. But it all comes down to the coat you're wearing. Whether or not you got a white coat as a doctor, or whether or not you got a suit coat on as a reporter, spewing out the propaganda nightly on TV to tell you about how wonderful these new cures and these new software packages and how the world's being automated to reduce costs is going to be great. People will accept that because the people that are parroting this information to them look respectable. Now, I did years as a network engineer, and my day began with getting dressed every day in a suit. That old closet full of suits, whole closet full of shoes. Spent a whole hour, hour and a half doing hair and makeup every morning. Thank God I don't have to do any of that stuff anymore. And then I'd have to go out with salespeople who were hoping to get CFOs and CIOs to ink the deal that we put together. The network that I configured on paper based upon our meetings and our walkthroughs and our diagrams and everything that we knew about their network and what they wanted for their future evolution. Now, I could tell you 99% of the time, first of all, I probably shouldn't say this, but it was a competitive advantage. Most women in any of the tech industry, and I think it still is that way, were not technical. It started back when I was like in third or fourth grade. And we took that aptitude test, and they came back and they told Susie that she could be a librarian, and they told Johnny that he could be a, I don't know, an auto worker. And then they came around to Jules and they told me that I could be a mechanical engineer, and the whole room burst out laughing. Well, it started back then. It was probably in 1974, maybe five. Well, my whole life I had that ability to just see the way systems work and how to put these pieces together and how all the little gears turn and how it affects the next gear in line. And I think that still helps me in what I do today. Well, we're connecting these dots now instead of it being physical machines and electronic hardware. Now we're doing it with information, but it's the same concept. Things connect. One plug in, one plug out. That's how it works. And the thing, though, that got me, it's like I would go in and I meet with these people, and the fact that I knew what I was talking about, the fact that I had half a brain on my shoulders, and I had put a lot of time and effort and thought into the design I prepared, and I would explain the reasons why I did this over something else, and I would always build it in so it was upgradable in the future. So here we're going to build it for this now, but you said you wanted to do this at some point, so you're not going to have to rip everything out and replace it. You just plug this in next, and then this, and allow you to do this, this, and this. And plus the fact that I was female. I don't think many CIOs, CEOs, CFOs at that time knew of too many female engineers. And we used to do pretty well. We used to win the deals. They always liked, I mean, we made lots of friends back then. They would always take us out to lunch. And of course, my boss, most of the salespeople I went out with were men, but my boss was a woman too. And she was the head of the department. So the two of us would go out. We were the dream team. I don't know. We used to kick some butt. But here's the thing. The fact that I was dressed nice, I was in a suit, I came from a place of authority, I knew what I was talking about, or at least I could talk a good story, won over CXOs of an organization who were holding the large pocketbooks to ink it over to sign a contract. Now, that's pretty impressive. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. So now I go to the opposite end of the spectrum. I went for a while. I think I went almost 3 years without getting my hair cut. And it turned into Swami Genie on top of my head. And I have my cutoff, cargo pants, shorts, my big flippy flip-flops, my camo t-shirts, my big sunglasses, and my ATV. And I'm going to tell you what. Talk about a complete difference in perception. Now, of course, I didn't go rolling up on any CIOs or CFOs looking like that, but I can tell you that even with people that I worked with in the past, absolute utter difference in the way that they responded to me. And I'm just talking about the sociological processes that are going on in people's minds and how easily they are manipulated just by looks. I talk about reading a book by its cover, so I'm no different. As a matter of fact, I know 10,000 books more of information now about everything else out there besides technology than I did then. Which means that I put a lot more pieces together than back then. Yet, when I'm not wearing a suit and my high heels and have my hair all done nice and makeup on, and I'm just looking like a wood bum who's out in the woods enjoying myself, enjoying nature. And I have something to say about it. People aren't so apt to not only not listen, but to take things that you say with any type of gravity. And it's not because I know any less. It's not because I'm not any less of an authority on any of the stuff that I've spent my whole life doing. It's just that I don't look like an authority figure. And guys, I'm telling you, I'm seeing that time and time again. All you got to do is put on a white coat or a suit and talk nice. Don't sound all tinfoil hatty. Make sure that little colic is swished down with some Grecian formula. And you're going to get yourself an audience. No, and it disturbs me because it is that easy to sway a population. And it's not an isolated incident. I see it time and time again. And now we see the places like DARPA and projects such as the Brain Project, which is a federally funded initiative started by Obama. They've been working on how to manipulate perception to get public buy-in. We had read a story last year or the year before about the White House was actually hiring sociologists or psychologists to help spin the narrative for this new Obamacare thing out to the public. It doesn't mean that the program was good. It just meant that they were going to try to find ways to get you resistant consumers to step up to the plate and accept what they want to force feed you. But remember, if they hold you down and try to force feed you, you're going to fight them. But I told you, my old boss, Mr. Double Black Belt, he always taught me, he was a senior executive. John's a very, very bright man. And he taught me a big lesson. Make them believe that it's their decision. Make them believe it's their idea. Plant those seeds and gently coax them. Move them along the right path. But you can't force them to believe what you do. You have to groom them to believe what you do. And that's exactly what is going on right now. So as we have this AI revolution, revolution in healthcare, revolution in robotics and connectivity, of course, we're bringing internet to Africa. Get everyone on their little smartphone surveillance device. We don't realize what that impact is going to be on our future. Nobody is looking down around the bend at the end of the hallway. And that's where the end game is. And that's where they're all planning on making bazillions of dollars before we get there, before we have loads of unemployed, bored people collecting universal basic income, realizing that, wait a minute, I don't have a job, which means I don't have money, but they give me money, but that means I don't control any of my own destiny. Not that you control your destiny now, but at least with some sort of autonomy financially, at least with a few disposable dollars. That isn't being bag tagged and tracked in cash, or a car that you can get in and start yourself with no black box, with no override controls once you've gone above the speed limit a mile or two. When you get into an old school vehicle, you're still kind of free. Gotta watch the laws, but if you go into the Outback, you can zoom around bends and up and down and around. But our future of self-driving cars, again, it's going to take that all away. All the autonomy that we enjoy now, that make us who we are, that give us those few moments of human thrill, are about to all be taken away. It is going to become a whitewashed world of Buck Rogers in the 21st century. And for those of us who get out of hand because we realize at the 11th hour that they're trying to stuff us into a box and close the door. Well, I hate to tell you, it's going to be too late at that point. And there is no getting out at that point. And if you don't go along with that, then we have new treatments for you. Because remember, we can diagnose mental disease on a spectrum just by the sound of your voice, Johnny. We're chucking out that DSM. So there isn't going to be any type of diagnostic statistical manual anymore because it's all fluid. You come and go out of mental illness, and we can fix that just a few zippity-zaps. Or hey, you know what? Put this patch on, and we'll just let the nanobots absorb in through your skin and carry the medication that kills that rebellious part of the brain. I don't know. But you know, it's going to be something like that. It's going to be very frightening. It's going to be this forced medical complex. If you are not peer pressured enough into compliance, if you don't step up with the rest of them, You, the individual who's not going along with the program, is going to become very apparent. We're going to see who those troublemakers are. Obviously, my suggestion would be cheek that pill. Spit it out when no one's looking. But the problem is they're going to do things we talked yesterday about, the smart toilet. I got the smart toilet story lined up here. We're going to look at that. You know, they're going to be able to literally tell, all in the name of healthcare and keeping costs down and keeping you safe, Johnny. They're going to be able to tell every morning you take a pee whether or not you took your pill, whether or not you ate those Cheetos, whether or not you consumed alcohol or some other illicit substance. We are talking invasive technology. We've talked about them also being able to read dreams and be able to look in and watch decision-making processes being made in your brain. They have all these brain technologies now and scans and lasers and things of that nature as part of this brain project. We're even inside your own mind will no longer be yours. It's going to be surveilled as part of the panopticon. I mean, guys, we really are at that point now. And again, I say this all the time. It may sound like science fiction, but it's not. All right, so yesterday, story came out. We're going to read this just because it's PricewaterhouseCooper. I had a friend, actually a student. I'll talk about him for a second, Brian. My friend Brian, he worked at a, when I was a technical trainer, I had 1,700 people that I was responsible for on a monthly basis to get them up to whatever the newest technology was. In the last 30 days, they were salespeople. I had to get them up to speed, so they had to come sit with me for an hour every month, and I would do a mass training. But I also had the new hire classes, and that would be an incoming class of 30 people. Sometimes we did double classes, so we had morning and afternoon, but it was 4 hours a day with me for 6 weeks, every single weekday. And I taught you everything from the very beginnings of computers, identifying every component inside of a computer, how to find all those components on our business system, how to put all those components together. And at the very end of the class, we built our own machines. Everyone bought their own parts, and we built our own machines. And I had people who came to me years later who told me, Joel, you changed my life, which is really unbelievable because back then, I mean, you wouldn't even think it. But one was my friend Brian. He had worked, I don't know, he was kind of a drifter, didn't do much with his life. He went to college, but I think, I don't remember if Brian dropped out. I think he was actually, he was going for political science at the time. I don't know if he ever finished, though. And he was working at a retail store in a mall when he came to work for us and ended up in my class. And he was a pretty good sales guy. He was very personable. One of those people that smiles all the time and just always has the best stories. But years later, I ran into him. I had left the training division back in 99, and that's when I became an engineer. I went to a different company and became a network engineer. But years later, I run into Brian, and he had become a network administrator for PricewaterhouseCooper. And when I met him, before he ever took my class, he didn't know anything about computers. And he told me that everything I taught him, he took that and he ran with it. And he got to be very well off as a network guy, PricewaterhouseCooper. So I'm going to read this story anyway. PricewaterhouseCooper releases a report on the global impact and the adoption of AI. This is April 25th, yesterday, 2017. So if Brian's out there, I don't know, I still haven't seen him in years, but I want to say, hey, because that, you know, that was really one of those things that you start to realize that maybe we're out here talking, doing things, and not even on the radio or writing articles, but just in your daily lives, like people that you meet, people that you help. And I don't think we realize that the butterfly effect actually is occurring out there, even if we don't ever get any type of report back in the future, that every time you touch somebody, I know. Reach out and touch someone, but don't laugh. I mean, like, touch someone emotionally or with your knowledge, with your brain, or you can just pinch them. But every time we touch someone, every time we have an interaction, every action is an equal and opposite reaction of some kind. And somebody might be going down a path, and when you touch them on that path, you might just inch them in a new direction. And of course, we all want to make sure that we inch them in the right direction. Because there are those of us out there who are always trying, like the little devil on your shoulder, who are always trying to get you to go in the wrong direction. But we have to be going in the right direction, guys. Right now, the time is not to retreat and hide and to be afraid of this stuff and to drown yourself in misery. I was there for a little while. Every time I think about this stuff, I get all completely depressed and freaked out because it's like, oh my God. But you know what, guys? Just by us standing up, providing facts, talking about this stuff, and getting people to think logically. See, that's the thing. They're not thinking logically. They're just listening to the bullshit narrative that's being pumped out there and how wonderful this is all going to be. But they forget. Once we lose every ounce of our autonomy, what's left? Where is the humanity? Where is your will to live? Where's the thrill? Where is it? Because there will be none. You'll be controlled, manipulated, and dosed if you don't go along with the paradigm. So today, yesterday, PricewaterhouseCooper released something called BotMe, a revolutionary partnership, which is a new consumer intelligence series that provides a comprehensive look at the global impact and the potential of artificial intelligence. The 2017 report was constructed from insights gathered at a 2017 event, gathering AI experts and a survey of 2,500 U.S. consumers and business leaders on attitudes toward AI and its current and future implications in society. Now, of course, here again, we're doing another one of these quote-unquote studies. Now, think about this. What they're doing is they're gauging public opinion. They need to see where we're at right now and how much further we need to push this. How many more screws we need to turn to get these resistant consumers over the line so we can start the full-blown rollout without people panicking. Well, their key findings include, number one, AI is no longer viewed as primarily a corporate tool to increase automation, but instead as an emerging technology to be leveraged to handle all kinds of global challenges. Yes, part of the globalization plans. Of course it is. We're going to have UN Atlas robots one day. 63% of all consumers agree that AI will help solve the complex problems that plague our modern society. So 63% of all humans are now selling us out to the machine. Number two, consumers and business decision makers believe that AI can help solve large-scale issues such as closing our education gap. So, of course, let's move Watson into teaching Susie. They also can use AI to help solve large-scale issues in establishing cures for cancer, yay, and other diseases, and even in ending gender inequality challenges. And I don't know about that one. Number three, and that's probably trying to encourage women to go into technology. You're seeing that all over STEM education, ladies. But you know what? STEM education, if you learn how to build the machine, you also learn, let's use a double-edged sword to our advantage, how to deconstruct the machine. Number three, we will be seeing more of AI's impact on our daily lives in the near term. 58% of people said that if they were to turn AI as an assistant in the next 5 years, it likely would be as a tutor for Johnny. And 22% of the respondents stated that they would likely turn to AI assistance for a doctor. So get that. 58% are into Watson as a tutor, but only 22% are into Watson as a doctor. So there's still a little bit of pushback there. So of course, they're going to have to work on that one. Number four, AI is also providing a competitive edge on the business front. And 72% of business decision makers believe that AI will be the business advantage of the future. Ding, now that should be scary. Because 72% of business decision makers are thinking that AI is going to give them the business advantage of the future. And guess what that means? That means the robots are coming to take all the jobs. Because you got 3/4 of all the businesses that were surveyed, at least for this PricewaterhouseCooper report, that think that they're going to open their arms and embrace AI. And there's so many flavors of AI out there, so many different big boys between IBM, Amazon, Google, Facebook. Everybody's using artificial intelligence, and they are going to be spinning out software as a service AI. Let's give you our API, and you can build it into all your applications, get it into your backend. And, you know, once it's up and running, it's going to be really difficult to put that genie back into the bottle. A 2017 AI report also highlights trends in the use of AI within companies, including how AI can shift human tasks from menial to strategic. And that's one of these big things that they're saying. Why? It's not going to be dangerous when robots take all the jobs, because the robots are only going to take the lowest form of jobs, those menial jobs that no one else wants to do. And you humans, you have such a wonderful brain. We're going to give you the stuff that requires strategic thinking, creative thinking, things that we have not yet taught artificial intelligence to do. But remember, everything we do, every interaction we have, every time we type into a search engine or we use a piece of software that is somehow back-end connected, we're feeding that AI machine. And as we feed that AI machine, it gets smarter and smarter. And they are now learning on their own without any human intervention. So how long is it going to be? It just means that those strategic and creative jobs might have a little extra time where humans are employed in them. But in the future, they won't be. And we're going to look at a story that Lady Pitbull sent me yesterday. An interview with Jack Ma from Alibaba, which is the Chinese, even bigger than Amazon equivalent. And he definitely is on board. Actually, Alibaba is starting to turn into not only an Amazon, but they're also spinning out into the world of Google as well. And you got Baidu over there also, that is the Chinese equivalent of Google. So people, put on a seatbelt, because the War of the Worlds is not going to be dropping bombs. In my prediction, the War of the Worlds is going to be who has the best technology. And we're not just talking about AI. We're also talking about electronic and energy weapons, bio weapons, CRISPR weapons. Remember, Clapper had come out in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee and said that CRISPR is now a WMD. We can splice and dice genes like there is no tomorrow, and then set out some new organism to go do our bidding. It's frightening. We're going to look at some of that maybe, I don't know, this week if we're going to get to it, but maybe next week. There are some new RFPs out there about not only locking down the genome, but being able to reset your genes if they've been all messed up, which has got to make you worry since they're using these same quote-unquote WMD technologies in healthcare as part of some of the new experiments they're doing. But anyway, so 2017 AI report also highlights trends in the use of AI within companies, including how AI can shift human tasks from menial to strategic, freeing up time for innovation. Yes, so the humans can sit around and be fed grapes, and the broader, bigger picture thinking, which can lead to transformation of the world. Number two, Another trend is where AI provides the greatest business advantages and how it can be leveraged across the entire enterprise, not just in one little small space. So let's put somebody like IBM Watson in charge of the whole company. Hey, why not? They're already talking about putting AI in charge of the government. Why not? Hey, humans have foibles and we have emotions. Humans make bad decisions when we are fueled by emotions, when we're fueled by those brain chemicals, those very same brain chemicals that they have learned to manipulate us. So put on a seatbelt. Number three, the integration of AI into customer service roles where customers are most willing and sometimes even eager to embrace AI. Now, we read about Watson yesterday. He is now online providing 24/7 tech support with the concierge module. And they're talking about rolling them out into other areas. We had Ross, the AI lawyer. We have Watson, that is an oncology doctor. And now he is learning genetics as well. I'm telling you, it is really coming. All right, so let's find out what Alibaba's Jack Ma has to say about this. And I had to love it because the second I open up this story, the picture on the story is a Doctor Who Dalek. And underneath it says, exterminate the low-skilled jobs. And that's what they're talking about doing. I mean, we've already looked at how Harvey's, I think it was Harvey's, the CEO of Harvey's, I think it was Harvey's or Hardee's, one of them, was looking at automating his restaurants. We already have Japan. There's all the robot restaurants. You know, they're automating a lot of factory work. And not that that hasn't been going on for 20 or 30 years, because it sure has been. But we are talking now about exponential increases in automation. And it isn't just hardware automation anymore. And remember, there are three different types of AI. We have the software AI, which is the ghost in the machine. We have the tin can AI, which is the robot like Atlas that has some sort of intelligent brain. Maybe they're going to use it for law enforcement and for the military. We also have autonomous drones, be able to search and destroy all on its own. And then number three, and this is the one that they are still working on, and this is why they are trying to crack all the chinks in the human armor and learn how biology works. That's going to be the skin job. That's going to be, and we saw one already. IEEE Spectrum a while ago had an article about the Japanese robot that had all synthetic organs. It was even running synthetic blood, and it sweat when it got hot for cooling. That is the next step to the land of androids. And I don't think that that's going to be 30 years out from now. They are working on that pretty heartily in the sex industry, if you can even believe it. Sex dolls and robots are moving along from things that I've seen. They're pretty bizarro. I don't know, maybe I'll, I don't have any story queued up, but I did have one on my WTF page a while ago that was very disturbing to me. They had integrated AI into this doll. So this doll actually started to learn who you were and respond to you based upon how you taught her. And if you were mean, then she would be mean to you. But it would learn like a child and learn from every interaction. And it was just many, many different ethical issues going on at once that were just so beyond disturbing that I couldn't even really think about it. But guys, we're getting to that point now. And if there is a market for it, well, you better believe that they're going to work on developing it, because there is nothing right now that is out of the realm of possibility. So anyway, Jack Ma, another rich tech billionaire. This is a Chinese one. Alibaba's Jack Ma, quote, in the next 30 years, the world will see much more pain than happiness. He would know, since he is one of the people that is helping usher this in. Jack Ma, the Chinese tech billionaire, who's the chairman of the e-commerce giant Alibaba. And Alibaba does sell smart toilets, by the way. Go to Alibaba.com, plug in smart toilets, you're going to see tons of them. And has a chilling warning for the world. Get ready for a whole lot of pain. In the next 30 years, the world will see much more pain than happiness, says the Chinese entrepreneur at a conference in China, according to a report from Bloomberg. Social conflicts in the next three decades will have an impact on all sorts of industries and walks of life. May's doomsaying was about the potential threat posed to society by automation. Over the coming decades, robotics, artificial intelligence, and even more advanced manufacturing are expected. And we've talked about desktop manufacturing with Eric Drexler. You know, once you have nano manufacturing from an atomic level, creating raw materials out of the environment, being able to put those together to make something. I mean, this is really going to be the world of Star Trek replicator type stuff, where your every want or need will be granted. And then they start asking, well, what's the value of anything? Well, then there shouldn't be any value. It should all be free. Well, guys, that utopia is never going to happen. They will not allow everything to be free. And if it is all free, guess what? You're going to be drugged because you are going to get bored. There will be nothing to work for, nothing to aspire to. Oh, sure, here, take a book. Or read online. Start learning about things, Johnny. Do some digital painting or music. I mean, that's not going to keep the human mind occupied. People want to innovate and do things that are thrill-seeking. And that's just not going to happen if it's a land of plenty and you're handed everything without ever having to work at it. And look at what happens with a spoiled child. That child demands more and more, and that child gets unruly when they're bored out of their skulls. Well, that's going to happen to a planet. Actually, I think it's 7 billion people. I said 17. That's a lot. And they're going to have a planet of bored, unruly people that just will not be allowed to happen. And in the end of it all, you know, the whole depopulation agenda that I used to laugh at and tell the tinfoil hat-wearing lunatics that they were crazy. Well, I don't think so anymore. I'm seeing a lot of signs on the wall. You know, we're overpopulated. Oh, climate change. Yes, the climate is changing. But I don't think it's us that's doing it. I think it's those that are using the environment as a petri dish that are doing it. But it's all in the name of setting the agenda, again, to further wrangle us down that hallway. And I always think of cattle as they're ushering in the cattle down to that one little hall. That around the corner is the meat saw. That's where we're headed. Over the coming decades, robotics, artificial intelligence, and ever more advanced manufacturing are expected to make large swaths of the modern workforce obsolete. Some argue that new jobs will inevitably be created to replace those lost by automation. And yet, that's the stupid story that they're selling everyone. But you're not going to create new jobs as fast as they are being eliminated. Watson can read a million pages a minute. How are you ever going to compete against that? Oh, wait. Elon Musk has a plan. Elon Musk is creating a neural lace so we can merge with the machine. And that's from somebody who we want to trust, somebody who we want to like out there. That's the solution? I don't know about you, but I'm not signing up for that one. Sorry, good old Elon. That is not my plan. But some argue new jobs will be inevitably created to replace those lost by automation. Though the more pessimistic, like Jewel, fear that if it is not handled properly, it could cause significant social and economic unrest and quote unquote pain. Like Jack Ma says, oh, there's a bee. I had the door open and the bee just landed on my computer screen. And the World Economic Forum, and yes, they are in the middle of this as well, has estimated that there will be a net loss of over 5 million jobs by 2020. That's like 2.5 years from now. Across 15 majorly developed and emerging economies. And Citibank has warned that automation risk increases inequality, estimating that 47% of all U.S. jobs are currently at risk in the next 2.5 years. 47%. And 77% of jobs in China are at risk. And we have read already about China. There have been a couple factories now that have gotten rid of all the employees except for a few to manage it all, and has replaced them all with artificially intelligent robots. It's coming. Cities with higher incomes and those experiencing more rapid income growth have fewer jobs that are amenable to automation, it said in a report. Similarly, cities with higher shares of the top 1% income earners are less susceptible to automation. So yes, the rich people, implying that inequality between the 1% and the 99% may actually widen. And I'm sure that is their plan as the workforce automation continues. So hey, if we didn't get rid of the middle class yet, it's the last nail in the coffin. We are all going to be living in the panopticon with the universal basic income, with them telling us how we have to behave if we want to survive, because they're going to have to spoon feed us, because there's nothing else left for us to maintain our autonomy, or to feed ourselves, or to clothe ourselves, or to house ourselves. And this is really disturbing, people. Where is this on the headline news? Where is the guy in the suit on the propaganda box telling you about this? Where is he warning you to help insulate yourself? Oh, wait, don't go spending all your savings there, Johnny, because you might need it in the future. You know, maybe you should back off on that vacation and that new car, because in just 2.5 short years, 47% of all the jobs that are out there in the United States are going to be gone. Well, Ma echoes these same concerns, saying, quote, machines should only do what humans cannot. And he's saying that, you know, maybe we should be smart about this. Only in this way can we have the opportunities to keep machines as working partners with humans, rather than as replacements for humans. And that's pretty much what it boils down to. Exterminate and obsolescence. The tech executive has previously been outspoken about another major threat to the liberal global order, and that is populism. In February, he warned that retreating from globalism, which some of the European countries are doing, which is something that Trump at one point was speaking out against. Now it looks like he's just been cannibalized. He warned that retreating from globalism could cause us serious trouble, even armed conflict around the world, if we stop trade. And remember, Trump actually threatened Xi when they were at Mar-a-Lago, or whatever his place is down in Florida. He threatened him with, you know, maybe not signing up for a new trade agreement or whatever, continuing the existing ones, unless they were all nicey nice. I think this is a direct zinger back at that. If trade stops, wars start, said Ma. We have to actively prove that trade helps people to communicate. And we should have fair trade, transparent trade, and inclusive trade if the world is to get along. All right, so where do we go from here, guys? Well, we have AI moving into every facet of our lives, whether we know it or not. We have applications that are rolling out, and the Trojan horse, as I have talked about many times, I truly believe is this 21st Century Cures Act and healthcare that opened the door for the floodgates of this technology to come into our everyday lives. It's out of the Daily Mail from 2016. Smart toilets that analyze your poop. And ultrasonic baths that can 3D scan your internal organs. Google patent reveals the plan, and of course it's Google, for bathrooms that can monitor your health. The patents were filed in January of 2015, and they were published July 21st on 2016. They monitor functional states and trends for human physiological systems. And they are including devices that send remote server or computing device sensor data. Like I said, we're all going to be bagged and tagged. Bathrooms of the future could soon be transformed into life-saving devices. And I told you last week, my daughter pointed out to me the first commercial that we've ever seen on TV for smart toilets. So the boob tube is pushing out the mantra. They want you to open your arms and accept it, because here comes the next piece of the internet of everything panopticon. Bathrooms of the future could soon be transformed into life-saving devices. Google's latest patent describes the ultrasonic bathtubs, the pressure-sensing toilet seats, and other devices to monitor people's cardiovascular health. This new technology would embed non-invasive health monitoring devices. Where have we seen that term before? Oh, in the 21st Century Cures Act, under neurological surveillance. Yes, those good old non-invasive devices. First to be your smartphone, and next to be some sort of little wearable. This new technology would embed non-invasive health monitoring devices in your bathroom that quote-unquote sense the person's health and will notify a professional if necessary. Ding, ding. Cardiovascular disease generally refers to conditions that occur in the body when your narrowed or blocked blood vessels form, which can lead to strokes or heart attack. Well, the search engine's latest patent describes the technology to determine the, quote, functional states and trends for human physiological systems. All right, guys, me too. Stick around.